Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. Before we get started, as we talk computers with Peter Green, want to say a big thank you to everyone who contributed during our spring membership drive. We had more than 7,000 listeners pledge. Pleased to welcome about 1,500 new members to WPR. You donated $780,000 to fund Wisconsin Public Radio and our programming, and you gave more than 46,000 meals to area food banks. That's very great, and especially thanks to all of you who contributed during this particular program. I'm really humbled by it. Thank you so much. And thanks to Peter Green of Infostar.com, who visits with us monthly to help with your personal computer problems. And if you have some questions, maybe you're thinking about a new computer, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Thanks for taking time to be with us today. A lot of things to consider when buying a new computer. You know, and it doesn't matter if it's your first computer or your 10th one. For a lot of people, they own 10 computers. How do you decide? What about laptop, desktop? We're seeing a lot more laptops these days.
You know, a lot of times people get fixated by the hardware. And yeah. It goes back to the basic rules. It's needs, goals, objectives, yep. Then the software, then the hardware. But some of those rules have changed a little bit because people are experienced at, you know, using a system, and, you know, how do you know when to make a change and what kind of change? And you have to still look at what you're using the system for. So is it, you know, what kind of software? Are you just doing web browsing, doing a lot of stuff online, doing email? And even email can be web-based so that you're doing it through your browser. You're not necessarily downloading it to your desktop. So what does that mean? Like Google Mail, Gmail, Yahoo, Mail, Hotmail, those are web-based email applications. You don't have to download the email to the messages to your desktop. You're actually seeing them in the cloud on those services. You can even collaborate doing documents online. Google's got a lot of applications for that. Are you doing web publishing? Web publishing, you can use a CMS content management system. That's all. It can be web-based as well. Joomla, Drupal, there are a number of those. Are you doing accounting? There are even accounting systems you can subscribe to as online services. So how are you using this? How are you using the system? How do you want to be using it? And then looking at the operating system, you know, Windows, I laugh when they say they're the most secure operating system in the world. And then I come in on a Monday and I see the server wanting 5 updates for, you know, security, potential security breaches. And then, you know, I look at the Mac and you hardly ever get a message like that. Very similar in terms of user interfaces, their graphical interfaces. And also Linux, Ubuntu, you know, and other disciples of Linux, which really originates from AT&T's Unix. So, you know, looking at the operating system, what kind of support are you going to get? Well, you know, Linux is a lot of self-help. Yeah, there are probably groups out there. You know, you have to look for them. It's going to require more work on your part. Windows, you know, is it your kids that are going to be support, you know, neighbors, your experience maybe that you're relying on, you know, Apple's operating system, they have help through their store. There are a lot of online sources. There are a lot of online videos, resources out there for video support, training, and so forth. You can even look at those before you even make your decision. You know, just Google or go on YouTube and do some searches for tutorials on what you might be looking at and see how it looks.
Why not?
Do a test drive before. And then the question comes, how do I get my data over? Well, you know, what kind of data are you looking at? Do you have pictures? Do you have movies? Do you have music? A lot of people have music collections. iTunes, you know, covers both Windows and Mac, so that's not really an issue. And then again, you know, what kind of smart devices are you hooked up to? You hooked up to your phones, iPads, tablets, and things like that. And then how are you backing that up? You can back it up to the cloud. You can back it up to a thumb drive. You can back it up to an external hard drive. Most people probably are not doing, DVDs or CDs because they're a lot slower than those devices, and costs have come down on those portable storages like thumb drives or flash drives. And then you start looking at things like portability. So we've covered, you know, what are you using it for? Operating system, some of the subtle differences in terms of support issues. And then in terms of size, you know, do you need a desktop? Do you need portability? How much portability do you need? Is it portability that you're only doing something maybe a couple of times a year? You can get a lot smaller desktop and simply just move that little unit. For example, Apple makes what's called the Mac Mini. You can get a smaller footprint, they call them small form factor desktops, where you just simply unplug the keyboard, the monitor, and whatever you're using, whether it's a mouse or a trackpad or whatever, and just move the box. So those are some things to think about. And then as far as, you know, what other things you might use it for, do you need a Blu-ray player? Is that really important to you? You know, 3D is out there as well. Streaming content, networking, you know, Wi-Fi. If you're a game player, do you need broadband, you know, internet access? You know, a lot of video horsepower, a lot of memory horsepower, hard drive. So there's a lot going on there, but, you know, when you start looking at the big picture of what you're using it for and where you want to be, that's going to help determine the software that you use, the services that you buy, and ultimately the hardware that you're going to be using to support those.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Questions about your computer or your software, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. We had a listener who wanted to ask you, Pete, how do you clear the clipboard? I use AutoCAD, and when the clipboard is full, it pastes any random block. The AutoCAD folks said it's a Microsoft issue.
Yep, it sure is. When that starts happening, I usually just simply reboot the machine. I'm sure there are utilities out there that you could probably find that might be able to clear that space. But I always find that when that clipboard starts getting cluttered and you have that kind of issue, there might be some other problems going on with the software that you're trying to use. So I just end up rebooting the machine.
And that works fine and no problem.
Well, the clipboard is basically memory that Microsoft is using to allow you to cut and paste. So, for example, you could actually, if you hit the print screen key on your computer keyboard, it'll take a picture of the image of your screen. So it's occupying that space in the clipboard. And you could actually paste that into a document or, you know, wherever you want to do it. So it's temporarily held in that memory. As it gets used, it starts to get weird tendencies or its personality changes.
Yeah.
It doesn't always do what you expect it to do. So simply rebooting the machine, you know, closing your applications and rebooting clears it and you start over new.
Shannon in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Shannon. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, what antivirus software do you recommend for a computer that's mainly used for internet, Facebook, Googling, and a little bit of Microsoft Office?
Okay.
And I'm not a Norton fan, so.
Okay. There are a number of good ones out there. There are some free ones that you can use. I would say at the top of the list would probably be Avast. AVG.
So AVAST, then AVG after that.
Yeah, AVAST, AVG. They've been around for a long time. They have a lot of support, you know, in terms of number of users. And you can, you know what, another thing you might want to do, I don't keep up on, you know, they kind of flip-flop in terms of who's the best and so forth. But a resource called CNET.com, CNET.com. You could do a search on AVAST or go to the review section and do a search on AVAST or AVG, and they'll probably give you some feedback in terms of editor's choice, and they might even compare it to some other products that are out there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another tool that I would recommend having on a system is called Malwarebytes.
Yes.
And in one of my solutions I post on my tips page talks about removing some programs that kind of can infiltrate your system, and the only way to get rid of them is to use their file assassin tool because it's – I give you instructions on – I think it's like the last tip that I post on the tips page at Infostar.com, but you have to find out what the file is, and then since you use a tool to find out what the file is, then you can use Malwarebytes, a file assassin tool, to actually remove it. Because what once a system gets infiltrated by some of these malware, spyware, and virus-type programs, is they hide themselves, and then they even mutate. When they feel like they're threatened, they change to another file name. But if you can find out what they are when they're in their stealth mode, which means that they're basically hidden to the user and they're hiding themselves from the operating system, but you can expose them with some of the tools I've posted, you can then use something like File Assassin within Malwarebytes to actually surgically remove that, you know, digitally remove that file. And since you're removing that file, it doesn't know how to mutate after that, so... You might want to take a look at that tip so you're at least prepared for what might happen someday.
Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Don in Waukesha, hello.
Good morning, Larry and Pete.
Good morning.
I'm trying to upgrade the RAM in a Toshiba laptop.
Okay.
And it's running Vista Basic. So it came with 1 gig, two 512s in two slots, and I ordered. I've got two gig modules,
right?
But it won't boot up when I put them both in. It'll boot up if I just put one in and leave a slot empty, or if I put the 2 gig in slot two and a 512 in slot one, it boots up.
Does it see all the memory when you put those two in? Does it see Does it see more than the 2 gig when you put in the 1 2 gig and the 1 512?
Well, no, it won't even boot up, so I have no idea. It does a couple things, looks at the DVD drive, and then does nothing.
But it does boot up with 1 2 gig piece of memory.
Yes.
And it recognizes that.
Oh, well, I guess so. The computer works.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm running it now with a 2 gig in one slot and a 512 in the other slot.
Right. When I see things like that, the biggest thing that I look at is to confirm that the board actually supports more than 2 gig.
Yeah.
That could be the problem.
The easiest thing to do is to go to the manufacturer's site and, you know, look at if you don't have the original documentation, which usually tells you how much it can expand to.
Yeah.
And you can't assume just because you can pull out the memory that you can expand to whatever you might be able to buy.
I did.
Right. You have to look at what the hardware says it can support. And I know in some of the desktops, you could, they might come with two 512s, and the best you can do is take out the 512s and put in 1 gig strips to bring it to 2 gig, because it won't go beyond that.
Yeah.
A lot of the newer boards are, you know, 8, 12, 16 gigabytes of memory. And that's why you're seeing some of these laptops just coming out with 6 gigs of memory or 8 gigs or 12 gigs. They're, you know, they're populating them with that amount of memory right away.
I see. Okay, that sounds like that's probably what's wrong. And yeah,
especially,
I'll try to check it out.
Yeah, especially when things misbehave.
Yeah.
Because it's not often that you can get bad memory chips, but if you can put one 2 gig strip in and it works, and when it comes up, you can see some kind of memory count. It usually tells you, you know, what it's got in there, so it's talking to the firmware. But if you put in the second one and it doesn't allow you to bring it up, and you then take both those out and you take the one that you put in for the second strip and put it in and it comes up, it's telling you that the memory is good, but having two is not better than one.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Don. Thank you very much for calling. Oh, man. Francie in Madison, you are next. Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling
because I need to buy a new laptop, and the laptop is my only computer.
Okay.
So it needs to be a real computer, but on the other hand, I travel a good bit, and my current 14-inch Dell feels really heavy in my backpack. So I'm considering converting to Mac, although I do see that PCs are now becoming ultralight as well. But I'm considering also the Mac Air. On the other hand, it's not as full a computer, and maybe I should get the Mac Pro, or maybe I should just get an iPad with the kind of cover that has a built-in keyboard, and that would suffice. What do you think?
Well, what kind of things do when you travel and using your present laptop, and do you see, you know, changes in terms of
how you'd use it?
Yeah.
Okay. When I'm traveling, basically, I need to check in with email occasionally. I need to check airline things on the web and such.
Okay.
However, since I'm also going to be at home, hopefully some of the time,
mm-hmm.
I will also be accessing iTunes occasionally, listening to CDs, which I understand with a Mac Air, you can buy this little extra plug-in, which you could keep at home.
Yep.
And I'll be doing some writing. So,
okay.
My dilemma. First, well, whether to go Mac at all, and secondly, mm-hmm. if so, what kind?
Okay. Well, I can tell you, I did a little experiment on that SuperDrive, which you referred to, that you can buy to plug in. I did that with a Mac Mini recently, and I bought both the SuperDrive, and I bought a compatible, what they weren't sure if it was compatible, but it was simply an external DVD read-write drive, and for probably about a third the price, plugged it in, and it worked just fine. So you don't necessarily have to buy an Apple SuperDrive, but aside from that, the Mac Air is very thin, very light. You're not going to get the large screen. But to be honest with you, a lot of people like that small size. It's high resolution. And if you're concerned about having a keyboard with you and being able to do the things that you were doing with a laptop but have it lighter, the Mac Air is a good solution. And there are some companies out there that are competing in that space, you know, to make a lighter laptop that's got more power in it than what we would call a netbook,
right.
Which are usually the 10 or 12 inch screens. So the Mac Air, I believe it's like 13.3 inches.
Yes.
The lower end, the starting end of the MacBook Pro starts at the same screen size, but, you know, it's going to be a thicker, heavier laptop. And the battery lives in those have improved quite a bit. You know, to go to an iPad as a primary and adding a keyboard, I don't know if I would go that route.
I think it's nice
to have it.
Great for having it on a trip like that.
Yeah,
like
it makes it real easy. I was even tempted to bring it in, you know, to use it here at the show just for a little bit. But, you know, as far as a laptop substitute, I probably wouldn't go that far with it.
No, but for on a trip.
Yeah.
You're just checking email and things like
that. When I took my kids abroad last year, we had the iPad 2 with us and a little netbook. And, you know, we used them interchangeably for checking email, streaming videos when we couldn't see any English TV and stuff like that. But, you know, the Mac Air is, I would probably go and evaluate them at the store. And then it boils down to, you know, how much you want to invest in the laptop. If you want something that, I guess if you're traveling and you want to have the laptop feature but not have it so heavy, that's the reason they made the Mac Air.
That's why it's there.
Yep.
Does the picture change at all if I'm planning on also trading in my BlackBerry for an iPhone? I think I'm going to wait for the 5 to come out.
Uh-huh.
Does that change the picture in any event, in any way, if I have an iPhone with me?
Nope, it'll interface and sync. Yep, it'll be pretty seamless.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call and good luck. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Suval, our on-air producer. Thank you so much, Marika. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi, this is Ben Marin's host of At Issue, inviting you to join me at a new time today. The program begins at 3. We'll discuss coping with change, just why is it so hard for so many of us, and a story from the day's news at 4, why it matters and why it matters to you. It's all At Issue in a new time of 3 o'clock later today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in today. Questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And by the way, Steve emailed us. We're talking about Mac or Windows or whatever. What do you do? He says, as a software developer, I've been with Linux since it was a baby, but my wife uses Windows at work. I finally got fed up with constantly fixing her computer's woes. Adware, constant device failure, freeze-ups, and so on. And so I bought her a Mac in 2006. My support time went from at least 10 hours per month to about an hour per year. So there's a happy Mac user there. Joanne in Cuba City, it's your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have an older computer. I think it has XP second edition. Anyway, it's been giving me these memory messages, like that I'm low on memory, and my son, who has a little knowledge but not too much, told me that my desktop and my taskbar are too full. And there's all, you know, things just kind of, I don't put them on there, but somehow they get on there. And I know you can't just, like, delete them, and that doesn't really just get rid of them. So I'm wondering if you can give me some advice on how to get rid of some of that stuff.
Well, the more you load up on files that are on your desktop, the slower Windows gets.
Right.
And the way those files get there is typically when you're the user on the system and you either save a file and you that maybe you're downloading or someone emailed to you, it might get placed on your desktop. So,
well, they're more like, it's more like programs. Like I got a TomTom GPS and now it's
Yep.
Down, and I mean, I very rarely update the thing, and it's right every time I open my computer, it's right down there on the taskbar.
Sure.
And Windows Messenger, I don't use that. I think it's more like, I mean, I don't actually like save files to the desktop.
Okay. So some of those are simply shortcuts that have been set up by programs that you've installed, and they don't have to be there. They're just quick access points to them. So you can delete those, but before you delete them, what you should do is go click on Start and then Programs and just make sure that the program is listed where all the programs are so you can access it.
Oh, okay.
And then the shortcut on the desktop is simply a quick way of launching the software versus clicking on Start and then Programs and locating it.
Now, okay. And are they the ones that have the little arrows?
Yep.
Okay, so then that kind of is a key that you know it's a shortcut.
And then as far as what's on your in the system tray in the lower right-hand corner, if you have a lot of icons, it's also going to slow down your system. And the way to remove that, and I've posted a tip on my tips page about Windows Startup, and you said you have XP, and there's some good resources out there that I've linked to that will help, I guess, clue you in into what's actually going on and with your system and your system tray. A lot of those programs get installed and occupy and utilize memory, and it starts slicing away at your system memory and resources to the point where it slows it down. So if you go to that tip, you'll see it talks about how to modify the going into the startup and modifying it. The quick and dirty way is if you click on Start and then click on Run and then type in MSCONFIG and hit the...
I'm sorry,
MS, so it stands for Microsoft, so MS and then CONFIG for config, and then hit Enter. You'll see a number of tabs, and one of the tabs is a startup tab. And what you should do is try to see if you can identify the programs that are listed and the ones that have checkboxes and they're checked. Those are the programs that are going to start up. So if you take notes on what you have checked and then systematically uncheck them, when you save and exit out of that MS config, it's going to ask you to reboot your computer.
Uh-huh.
And when it reboots, it's not going to load those programs that you unchecked.
Oh, cool.
And eventually you'll get to a nice equilibrium where you can use your computer, it'll be faster, and it won't be bogged down with some of those programs that are just trying to occupy space on your system, but you don't use them.
I have one other quick question. In case I decide I do need my son just said, just get a new computer, Mom. But,
that's always an easy thing to throw out there. Just get a new computer.
Well, I know, but I have so much on there. And I did back everything up to an external hard drive.
Yep.
But what I'm wondering is, I use it for my small business, and I have all these email groups.
Okay.
And I have no idea how you would transfer that or how you save those.
So when you say email groups, are they messages that you're downloading to your computer?
No. I mean, people that I have that I send stuff to, and I have them grouped,
Okay.
So Group A gets one sort of message, Group B gets another sort.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, just in Internet Explorer, or Outlook Express, sorry.
Okay.
I have all of my email contacts.
Sure.
And I'm wondering how I can save that just typing all that.
That's a great question, and it's something that you probably are not realizing that you're actually not backing that up.
Right. I know I'm not. So.
And what you can do is in Outlook Express, and there are some good resources online for that as well. I think there's you can Google search it. I think it's called Inside OE. Or Inside Outlook Express. If you Google search that, you'll probably find a good resource for that. But what you need to do is you need to export your address book from Outlook Express, and that'll save your contacts, and it'll give you a whole bunch of options. So if you're not sure, you probably can click the obvious things like first name, last name. You know, it depends on how much information you put in there. If you haven't put in a lot, you're probably going to want first name, last name, and the email, and there might be some other little tidbits in there. If you don't really use it, then don't click on all those extra fields. But you need to export your address book to get your contacts out, and when you export it, give it a location and name that you know where it is. And then as far as your emails, you can export your email messages out to be imported into another application. So another application that Microsoft uses is Windows Live Mail, and you can actually import those Outlook messages into Windows Live Mail. I'm not sure of the transportability between Outlook Express and all the other email programs out there. Outlook is another one that you can import into, and I'm not sure if you were to transfer over to a Mac, how to get that done, but I'm sure there's I'm sure there are people who have written programs that transfer the data over.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Joanne. Appreciate it. And Rich in Chippewa Falls.
Hi.
Turning to you now. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I publish a website from my PC, and I update it pretty often. I'm having problems with the jukebox that I have on the website, and all of a sudden, a few weeks ago, it stopped working. I have Windows XP Professional, and I've got Explorer 8.0. What happens is I upload the whole website or update it, and it gets to when I go to the website after I republish it, I can see the jukebox there, and it looks fine. Everything seems to be working, but there's no sound. It doesn't play. In the corner of the jukebox where it usually is the counter that's counting the time of the music that's being played, instead of having the counter, it says it's loading. So evidently it's trying to load, and I don't understand what's going on here. I did recently upgrade Explorer to 8.0 and went through setting up the settings on Explorer, and I don't know if that coincided with my problem beginning. I use Coffee Cup Web Designer, the program for publishing my website.
Mm-hmm.
I did talk to the people at Coffee Cup, and you know they went over everything that I'm doing, and I, you know, followed their advice, and I'm doing it, you know, the way I've always done it, and it just seems odd to me that that all of a sudden it started doing this. And I got a sneaky feeling it has something to do with my updating of Windows Explorer. I do have McAfee, and I shut off the firewall when I do the uploads. Oh, one side note too is before I publish the website, I do a preview,
okay.
And the previewer uses Explorer to look at the website, and everything is fine on there. The jukebox plays just fine.
Hmm.
There's just something in the process of getting that to my. Any ideas?
So when you publish the website, you preview it and it works fine, and you're actually previewing it on your machine.
That's correct.
When you publish it, have you tried looking at it from? And you said you talked to the Coffee Cup Web Design Company, so they've looked at it from their systems on your published website, and they're not able to get it to play as well. Correct.
Right. I did use Safari also.
Okay.
To look at my website,
okay.
And it didn't play on there. I've also had other people that I know. Go to my website. Is it playing the music for you? No.
Right. Okay. So based on what you've told me, what I would do is I would explore with the web hosting company that there might be some kind of compatibility issue with what you're publishing and maybe an update that they've done recently where there's you know, an incompatibility between a component on their website and your design that is creating a roadblock.
That's kind of where I've been leaning too, and that was my next step, that I was going to get in touch with the hosting company. And
yeah, I can tell you that those do exist because I've had experiences where a network administrator hadn't updated their Microsoft Exchange, and there was an incompatibility that existed between the email clients that were sending email and the Exchange collecting and handing off the email. It would act as if it hadn't received the message and would continually send back and say, hey, can you send me that message again, to the tune of like 200 times.
Yeah.
So, and that's simply because there is an incompatibility between the version of the Exchange that they were using on their server and, you know, the software that everyone else was using to send email out. So those kind of incompatibility, or however you want to phrase it, they do exist. And when you tell me that anyone else that's looking at your website can't see this, you can preview it on your system and as if you had published it, but you're running it locally and it works. But now the common denominator of it not working is that you've published it, and not only can you not see it work, but no one else can as well.
Sure.
Is that it's now on the website and there's something that exists there. And, not to rule this out, but some of the websites even have limitations on how much they're allowing you to stream and how much bandwidth is used.
I did take the whole website and remove it entirely and mm-hmm. just put the jukebox on there.
Yeah, but there might be a limitation in terms of like a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit that counter, you know, that limit,
okay,
then they just, you know, will stop it so that you can't continue to go beyond that counter.
I see.
So mm-hmm. The other option is to, move it to another web hosting company and see, if it works there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are free sites out there that you can test it with.
Give it a shot.
So I would try that as well. Because it sounds to me like everything that you're doing works, especially if you're previewing it. So now you're handing it off to somebody else's service, and that's where you're experiencing the problem.
Good luck. Thank you, Rich, for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar Madison. And a couple of questions here that I wanted to try and get answered. Carol from Eagle River says she's considering buying a Mac laptop. She wants to know what's the lifespan of the laptop for something like that in years? What would you usually say,
well,
Pete?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It all depends on how you look at it. For example, I get a laptop for my kids, and he's been pestering me to get a new one. But, mm-hmm. you know, 5.5 years he's had his. And problems with it, I think everything except for the battery and operating system issues that I've dealt with. But other than that, you know, that's really pretty minimal. Battery issues are probably more common with laptops in terms of them, just running out of their useful life. I mean, they even tell you, you know, with like your phones that, you know, there are a limited number of, you know, start and stops, you know, on and offs. Eventually it's going to expire. The battery technology's gotten better, but, hard drives, moving parts in those, those can fail. I've experienced that with my daughter, and she has a MacBook Pro, and that I think was into maybe it's towards its end of its second year and the hard drive failed. So, do you buy AppleCare? It's all a matter of risk and how you feel about that. I usually turn it down, and I did in that case. But using Time Machine for backups is great on the Apple platform. I know people use Apple products for a very long time. I've got one of their Tower Mac Pros. I think it's got to be at least 5, maybe 6 years.
Yeah, I've got one that's that old, you know, at least.
And I know PCs, you know, people have had PCs 10, 12 years. You know, sometimes nothing goes wrong with them, and then, you know, it's time for a change because either the software you're using needs to be upgraded or a part fails on it and you can't find a replacement part.
There you go.
So, you know, they're appliances. I mean, they're you know, just like cars. Some people have great luck with brands and some people have terrible luck with brands, and there are acronyms for the brand names, you know. I'm not going to mention what they are, but, you know, people have fondly, you know, given acronyms some new meanings. So that means make sure you back up your data.
Dan in Partyville, hello to you.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My wife's got a Dell laptop, and she uses it mostly for pictures, a little social media, and a little bit for work. Last weekend, she booted it up, and the screen went black, and it made a kind of a whistling noise. So we shut it down, and it just kept on doing that. So I took it to my local computer guy, and we thought it was the hard drive crashing, and at first he did too. But then he ran some tests on it, and it was reading the hard drive, and it was reading one of the memory slots, but not the other one, not number two. And the computer eventually prompted him to run a memory test. This was over the course of about 3 hours, so I'm really shortening this up. But he ran the memory test, and it said the memory was fine. He shut it down, rebooted it, and it all came back, almost like that memory test, you know, burped the system, and it came back. But now my wife told me last night that it's made that whistling noise again. But it hasn't come up with the black screen. Any ideas? Something that we should worry about? I started backing stuff up last night.
Well, it sounds to me like, you know, there's definitely a part that's failing. And
another fan.
The whistling noise could be from the fan, but it could be because it's struggling with a part. And, you know, it's the whistling noise is just an indication that it's got an issue with something. The fact that it ran that memory test, it could be as simple as, you know, changing out the memory and that might fix it. Or, you know, just running it with one piece of memory and see if the problem goes away and doesn't come back, then you know that the other chip is suspect. Unfortunately, what I've seen over the years of working with hardware is that the memory, if it's got problems, the system usually doesn't work. It usually never gets to the point where it runs a test and it's successful. I've never seen a memory test really say, you know, it's failed and the system's working. In other words, if you're getting a piece of memory that's flaking out, the best way to test and see if it really is the bad part is to remove it and see if your system behaves okay. If it does, then you know you've removed the part that's causing the issue.
Well, he removed both memories and swapped them back and forth, and yep. he had one that he knew was good, and it was right. Doing the same thing.
It was doing the same thing.
Until that test.
Yeah. Then it could be an issue with the actual board itself.
Okay.
The other thing I was explaining to one of my friends that how old is this laptop?
Maybe 3 years old.
Uh-huh.
We're running Windows 7 on it.
Lot of use?
No, not a lot, no.
Okay, all right. Well, one of the things I was just going to say in general terms, as systems get used over time, they heat up and they dry out. And with Dell, I know Dell has had problems with capacitors in some of their system boards. So what you may want to do is check in to the Dell website with your system.
Okay.
And see if there have been any issues as related to your laptop. typically, unless you're proactive in finding out if your computer that you're using has had problems, they're not going to find you.
Okay.
They're not going to tell you.
All right. It,
unless you've gone through the registration process, and a lot of times people have not.
I have registered it.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe the fact that you're registered is great, but that maybe they didn't contact or follow up on you. You know, you can't trust the fact that, you know, you just have to look into that and make sure that there are no reported issues. You might also want to go on their site as well as do a Google search and see, based on the symptoms that you're having, if there are any other that there are other people who have had the same or similar problem and it's pointing a finger at something.
Oh, okay. Because
you might not be, you know, don't assume that you're the first one to have that problem and see what else might be a resolution for it.
Okay, I'll do that. I have one more quick, really simple question, but it's confusing me. What's the difference between a DV plus R and a DVD minus R?
I've used them both ways. It used to be that the drive manufacturers only supported one way or the other, but the drives that have come out in recent times, probably in the last, I'd say at least 5 years, maybe even more, pretty much support all of those drive formats.
Okay.
It used to be that the drive manufacturers were going one way or the other, and... you know, if you look up the specs on your drive, you'll probably see that it says it supports both formats.
Okay, so there's really no difference, just whatever supports it.
No,
okay.
The one thing that you might want to make note of, and this is just for future reference, is there are what are called dual-layer drives, which allows you to write a lot more data on a DVD. So it's like 4 point plus gigabytes versus 8 point plus gigabytes of data on a dual layer drive. And then Blu-ray players store even more, but requires a Blu-ray media and Blu-ray player.
There you go. Thank you, Dan, for calling. And Mary Sue in West Bend. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
I get my email on a 2007 Microsoft Outlook program. And lately, like for the past 2 weeks, I can read one email and close it, and then I can't read any others. It just kind of freezes. I can move my cursor, but I can't get, I can't open any others, and I can't close the program. I can only open the email if I restart my computer, and then it'll usually work fine. But I have to restart it with that program still open. So I don't know if I'm doing any harm by doing that, and I don't know what's going on. Why would it do that?
So this is with Outlook?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Outlook uses what's called a .pst file, and I'm not sure if it's an indication of you having problems with the actual file being an issue or if there's something going on with the hard drive on your system and it's just having like a tug of war. But what you may want to do is, do you have a lot of messages that are stored on your Outlook?
Yes.
Like
4,600.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that. One of the issues with Outlook is it's got a memory limitation in terms of how big that file can be, and you might be playing a tug of war with the limitation. So
maybe if I just delete a bunch of those, I'll be all right?
Yeah, what you may want to do is some housekeeping. And you probably want to back that file up, too, before you start, you know, slicing and dicing, taking things away from it. What I would do is I would recommend, if you do a Google search on Outlook storage folder, so that you know where the file is stored, so then you can back it up. You can even rename it, you know, so that you know where it's placed. Not sometimes, but Microsoft has a tendency to bury the actual file in your user file location many layers below the surface of your system. And what I typically try to do is relocate it so it's in a folder that's easily accessed and can be backed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you back it up, then you can go back into it and, you know, and make a copy of that backup file. And then go in and you know, delete some messages and see if that helps. But I would also look for some utilities and see if, just in the case that it might need a repair, if you need to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. I can, you know, even though the email freezes up, I can access other programs. It'll uh-huh. open the other programs like Internet or Word or whatever.
Yeah. How about, how old is the system?
I don't know. Probably over 5 years, I would say.
Yeah, you might have some storage issues on your hard drive, and you might want to take a look at that too.
Now, frequently, it has asked me if I want to archive old items.
Yep, I would let it do that, but just check and make sure you've got, you know, free space on your hard drive before you do that.
Yeah, absolutely, you need to do that. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Mary Sue. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest here today, and he's talking about your computer issues and how to solve them. You can join in, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer and your software today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Questions at 1-800-642-1234. And Pete, this time of the program, you always have a top 10 list for us of great websites. And what do you have for us today?
You'll find them on Infostar.com. And if you go to current or you go to the archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. I've got one correction, but I'll get to that in the list. Number one is takemefishing.org. Which is a boating and fishing resource to help you get the most out of fishing and find places. The next one is called fishbase.org. I don't know if you knew about that one.
No.
32 plus thousand fish species. It's just an incredible online reference. So if you find something new in your catch, you can identify it. MotherEarthNews.com, the self-proclaimed original guide to living wisely. Lots of cool stuff free online, and then they also have their paid-for-print subscription. Number four, Apple products always have rumors and truths. Well, this one is called AppleTruthAndRumors.com, so it's a resource to help you keep up on Apple products. Number five is going to be Change, and it's the new one's going to be called EduCause.edu. It's EduCause.edu, and it's a nonprofit that advocates education through the use of higher technology, using information technology. Number six is ReviewOpedia.com, and it's a resource where you can share your opinions about websites, products, and service providers. Number seven, if you're looking at studying abroad, I just happen to find this resource, and there are others out there, but this one is called gseabroad.com and just gives you insight into all the different programs that are out there. Number eight is called serverfault.com, and it's a free collaborative question and answer site for system administrators and desktop support professionals. Number nine is yardsalesearch.com, nationwide listing of private yard sales, so it's a way to get your info out there. And number 10, we've got Windows 8 on the horizon, so here's a site for that. Forums.windows8.com is a resource that discusses topics.
Getting ready to go.
Yep, yep. And if you missed it, I still have the link up there for the Windows 7, what they call God mode, which is just a quick shortcut into changing all the things that you want to change with Windows 7.
And, of course, those are all available at Infostar.com. Just go to the site and you'll find them. Thanks, Pete. And Cindy in Platteville has a question for you, so we move to her now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
And hi, Peter. I have a question about downloading photos, and this isn't just for trite Facebook use. It's for, of course, business site on Facebook, and also for downloading photos for various marketing sites for items that we want to sell.
Okay.
I'm running on Windows 7. I use Firefox as my browser, and I have Kaspersky Internet Security, which I just recently updated. We previously, you know, several months back, didn't have a problem downloading pictures, and now I am just not able to get pictures to download. And I'm thinking there's probably some simple setting in my computer that I have that I'm missing, and I'm wondering if you can give any suggestions as to any settings that I might use that would allow pictures to upload. Used to be able to do it pretty quickly, and now it just won't happen.
So are you looking for pictures and then downloading the pictures that you find?
No, I'm trying to download pictures that I have in my files that I have taken.
Okay. And you're trying to move them to where?
Oh, I'm trying to move them to, for instance, my Facebook business site with images of some things that I've done. You know, different sites that we're trying to do some marketing on with some with some collectible items and that type of thing.
So are the I'll just give you some examples. Typically, like, for example, with eBay, you know, if you want to post a picture of something that you want to sell, you browse your computer and locate that file.
And that's what I'm doing, but it just won't upload. It just goes around and around and around, and nothing ever happens. So I don't know if I have some setting or if it has something to do with my firewall or some cookie setting or something like that.
Okay. Well, you know, some things to try. One is turning off the firewall and seeing if that makes a difference.
Okay.
Another option is, you know, doing a just cleaning. Are you doing this through your browser when you're?
Yes. Like, for example, well, I'm not too familiar with the other things where my husband is trying to market particular items. But, for example, if I'm trying to download something to Facebook, I'm doing it through, you know, their photo download feature on their site and trying to get it into my business site on Facebook. And I go through and I browse. I select my file just like I'm supposed to. I've even tried it different ways. You know, there are some suggestions on there, for example, to download one directly from your camera program as opposed to one that you've edited. And it doesn't matter which way I do it, I cannot get it to download. And I'm checking file sizes on these different items. They are not exceeding the file sizes maximum that they recommend.
Okay. Well, so the firewall is one thing. It doesn't sound to me like clearing the cache and history on your browser is gonna make a difference.
Right, and I've tried that too, and that has not done anything.
Yeah. I haven't seen a problem like that before, but it doesn't mean it hasn't been solved. So what I typically do is, and you just have to get better at how to ask the question and read. And read the answers, even if they're wrong.
That's why novices like us need professionals like you.
Well, you need to ask the question, you know, the problem that you're having, and read the answers and understand why the answers are not giving you the answer.
Ah, okay.
And then, so how to ask the question better. Sometimes this takes time. Sometimes it happens quickly. But I would do a search on problem loading picture files, Facebook, and any other sites that you're doing.
Okay.
Image won't load. You know, anything that you can think of that will shed some light on how to get it answered. And like I said, when you read the answers and they look like they're wrong, it's because you're not quite asking the question the right way, and it'll eventually lead you to that solution. What I'm seeing from what you're describing in my mind is that there is something that is creating a roadblock that is not letting the picture from your system be pushed or transferred off. So those are some other words to use. Unable to transfer pictures to Facebook would be another way of looking at it, as well as uploading. So using the word transfer, blocked.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if anyone else is listening that's had that kind of problem, but
maybe typically, somebody has.
Typically the services that you use online allow you to browse that file and upload it. So it's grabbing the file and then pulling it up into their system. So those are the ways that I would look at solving it.
Good luck. Thank you for calling, Cindy. Appreciate it. Ernest in Vernon County, it's your turn. Hi, Ernest.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Two questions. I'll go with what I think is the quickest first. I have a book. I bought a new computer, and a Windows 7 Dell desktop, and the virus checker that comes with it when you buy it, of course, is expired. After I get the book published, I wanted to put it online. What's the safest way to get it online and, say, go to AVG without getting a virus or malware or whatever come into it before I actually get it backed up with a good virus checker?
Well, keep in mind that when your system has no coverage, that you're susceptible to, you know, getting viruses or worms or trojans on your system. So
I understand that.
You know, subscribing to some of these free programs like Avast or AVG, and there are others out there, is going to give you some form of protection. There are no 100% guarantees because there's someone out there always trying to do something a little bit different, a little bit, you know, far-fetched, that is going to entice somebody, you know, and breach the security on your system, and they get through. And then once those companies hear about it, then they post a fix to it and, you know, add them to the definitions so they don't get through on your system. So I would probably actively seek out, you know, getting, you know, a solution on your system. I would also make sure that the system that you have on that is not updated is probably removed, because it might also try to run interference on whatever else you're trying to do to your system.
Okay. Second question.
Mm-hmm.
I have the computer that is online is a older, I don't know, 5-6 years old, Windows XP, and it came with I've got error problems with it. I run it for not very long, and I start getting messages that I'm losing memory in such and such a line, and it tumbles through that. Anytime I try and download anything, it'll go through the download process, and I'll get a message that there's some problem, and it will not download. Now, you've been so generous with your time over the years, but I've never heard you speak about, if I brought this to your shop and had you look into it, what kind of cost would the average person be looking at to correct a Windows issue similar to mine?
Okay. Well, something like that, what I typically look at is when you're telling me it's having a problem downloading file and it's 5 or 6 years old, what comes to my mind is storage and capacity and free space and the setup of Windows. And I can tell you there's ways to free up space and, you know, not throwing, you know, more hardware at the system. In other words, upgrading the hard drive and stuff like that. So what, you know, in terms of how much something like that costs to fix, it could be something as simple as a half an hour of time and tweaking the operating system, where you right mouse click on the recycle bin and change the properties on the recycle bin so it's occupying 1% of your hard drive space instead of, you know, stuff like that.
Right. I've followed all those. I do a CC cleaner.
Okay.
I have that set. I've done absolutely everything that you've recommended over a period of time.
All right.
I believe, and I'm not good with computers. I have a friend of mine that comes up that helps I think it was sent with something. Could it possibly be a Dimension 2? And then it somehow or another I've got a Dimension 3, because I was going to just take the disk that came with it and go back to the original system. But
sure.
But I think it went from a 2 to a 3. Well, I don't have a disk. That must have been a download from Dell.
Right. Okay.
And but, so, but as far as the storage issues, if there's a virus on it, it's downloading files, or I have no idea, but I don't think it's going to be a half-hour deal. what is if it is, I would love it, yeah, but I wouldn't expect that. Is there? What is your hourly rate?
What is my hourly rate?
Right.
As
you walk in the shop.
It's, well, I don't really have a shop, so I do it by appointment.
Okay.
And I kind of pick and choose how far I go. And
how far
and
you travel and stuff.
How far I travel and how much of a project it potentially is, because I am involved in a lot of different things. And
I understand. I can't imagine where you get the time for all the stuff you do.
So, I mean, you can shoot me an email off the website and, you know, describe, you know, the problems and issues, and I can give you some dialogue and see if it's something that's something I want to take on. But I love playing.
You're a mobile business? I mean, yeah, there's no place, like I'm in Vernon County, so I'm 70 miles away from the center of Madison.
Yep.
So I can't load this into my car and drive down there and leave it with you.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Probably wouldn't make sense.
Okay.
But I can, you know, help coach you through some of the things you want to make sure before you take it to somebody, you know, that you just want to make sure are covered.
Okay.
Yeah, I manage a couple of networks. You know, people ask me about my website, why, you know, I'll update it for you. You know, I don't, you know, there's a lot of time in doing and you know, redoing an entire website. I play hockey a lot. Some of my friends bug me about that and are jealous. You know, and I've got a house to maintain and things like that. So that's why, you know, to say, here, come to my shop. I don't have a shop, don't have a store to do that. And, I mean, I'd love to be able to help more people, but, you know, doing it through the radio is probably the best way.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Ernest. And Sheila in Portage up next. Hi, Sheila.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm having problems with my satellite and my emails through Microsoft Outlook.
Okay.
I have an HP Pavilion Elite HPE with Windows 7 and 64-bit. I decided to probably, not a good idea, install Office 2010.
Okay.
It would not, I could not install it on my computer, so I took it into a tech who actually did install it, but he kept 2003 on too.
Okay.
And the 2003 is a student and teacher.
Okay.
And the 2010 is a home and business.
Right.
Well, it still wouldn't work with the satellite people, and I called them, and they said they only supported up to 2007. So I uninstalled 2010, reinstalled 2003, and it still wouldn't work. And it keeps telling me that it's something to do with my Outlook 2003. I took it into another tech in town who said he could send and receive with his internet connection using my password and email address. And I brought it home and I tried it again, and now I'm getting a Microsoft Office Outlook has stopped working.
Oh,
and I was wondering, is there something to do with me installing 2010 over 23 and then uninstalling
it
and then putting in 2003 again? And should I buy a 2007 and just start all over?
So you're using satellite service for your internet?
Yes, correct? I live out in the country.
Okay. And you have no problem being online with them for browsing and stuff like that, correct?
Right.
Okay.
It's just going through Outlook. And actually, I do have an old computer with XP on it, and I've been getting my email messages through there on the old 2003.
Okay. So the tech that you brought it to said that they got it to work with the 2003, and they were able to send and receive
through
their ISP.
Yes.
And when you brought it back, you were not able to do that.
No.
What are the satellite people say? Is there anything that they're...
Well, they keep saying, I've called them five times, and I always get a different answer, and it sounds like they're reading from a script.
Sure.
And they're saying, one said that they can only utilize Outlook 2007, 2010 won't work, they can't do that.
Okay.
And then they keep telling me that if the settings are correct, and they are just like the ones I have on the old computer, that it's something to do with my program here.
So they reviewed all the settings in your communications, and they're saying all that is correct.
Yes.
Sometimes I change some of those settings, and occasionally they work. I have some problem systems where I get error messages about certificates and having to accept them.
Yeah, authentication type things.
Yep.
Okay.
Are you getting any of those messages?
Yes, sometimes. And they told me there's little boxes in there that you can check.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, you know, that that's authorized. And
right.
And I changed the settings for their satellite service, which was like outgoing 995 and incoming 465.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done all that, and I've gone around and around, spent many a sleepless night trying to figure out what I can do.
Right.
So I'm thinking if I did buy another another Office program in 2007. And uninstalled 2003 and just installed the new one without 2003 being on here, do you think that might help?
Well, the one question I have is, are they saying that they don't support 2003?
No, they're saying they don't support the 2010 that
correct.
I put on.
So they'll support 2003, 2007, but not 2010.
Correct.
And you're having the problem with 2003.
Uninstalling it, repairing it,
right?
You know, trying to fix it,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I would try doing? You're using you're talking about using Outlook for your email, correct?
Yes, I definitely want to do that.
Okay, have you looked at Windows Live Mail?
No.
What I would do is I would download Windows Live Mail and see if you can get that to work on your system.
Well, does that go through Outlook or not?
It's similar. You might want to take a look at it and see if it works for you.
Okay.
It's a Microsoft product, and it's something you can download for free online. And I think it's see if you can get that to work.
Yeah, and again, the name of it is
Windows Live Mail. There's
Windows
actually
Live Mail.
Windows. I think if you do a search on Windows Live, it's not just mail, but there's a whole bunch of other things, too. It's part of the ads that they've done in the past couple of years on TV about their Windows Live stuff. So you might actually find some good things about it that you may not want to keep pursuing the Outlook.
And thank you for calling. And, Pete, thank you. We're out of time.
Goes fast.
Yeah, you'll be back in a month. We'll do it again.
Yeah, and hopefully more flowers will be blooming.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back in a month, and we'll meet with him again and answer your questions. Tomorrow, Victoria Houston talks with us about her latest book in the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series. And we'll also talk about the Dictionary of American Regional English. Stay with us.